Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 567. In this episode, Scott talks with his wife, Mo, discussing her health, her new job, and his recent trip to Kenya and South Africa.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. It has been 200 or 300 episodes since I had my wife on. Episode 214, I think it was, on relationship hacks, which started us working on the book that we have never released.
Hello, love.
Why did we not release the book? We're like 4 or 5 chapters in, and then life happened.
Yeah. I mean, I was at school, went to work, the kids. Yeah, life happened. Got busy.
I was told not to finish it by myself because it wouldn't be a relationship book if I wrote it by myself.
That's right. More of a monologue, really, you know.
This is the book my wife said was not okay for me to write. Yeah, we need to get that book done. I need to quit my job and we need to finish that book.
No kidding. Yeah. I think it'll be an important book when we get to it, but yeah, it's been busy.
Yeah. I think it was episode 214. We did a thing on relationship hacks and we talked about the allowance system and all that kind of stuff. But since then, you had cancer and we did an episode of This Developer's Life about cancer. I know how you are, but here's the question. How are you?
Thank you for asking.
How's that cancer working out?
Yes, right. Yeah, you know, only in this household, in the Hanselman household, could I be told, get over yourself, you have diet cancer.
I did not say diet cancer.
I think you said either diet cancer or cancer light.
Cancer light.
Yeah.
It wasn't cancer zero. No, but I'm just saying it could have been worse.
Absolutely. It could have been worse. And I'm glad that, you know, again, I didn't need chemo, didn't need radiation. So it really feels like it was a bullet dodged. It's going to be 5 years this year, and it's pretty exciting. It's pretty exciting. I'm glad that so far, knock on wood, I've been good.
Right. So no chemo, but extensive surgery with some side effects, but you're more, you know, basically 100%. People can't tell that you had cancer when you're walking around.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Which, of course, is the point.
You've
for
got,
people not be able to
I don't
tell.
Know. You got all your fingers and toes, right? You got the important stuff.
I've got the important stuff. Let's hear it for cancer light.
To be clear, I don't remember saying cancer light. I think the point was it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't want to make
now we're here making fun of cancer people. We have had friends who have had considerably worse cancers. So to be clear, we are not trying to make light of cancer.
Yeah, I know. I think...
just yours.
No, I think part of it was, I'm sure we talked about this before, as the guilt of having this big label assigned to me when I felt good and have continued to feel good. It is very hard sometimes to be told, oh yeah, oh, you have cancer, and you have people give you this respect and look at you with such awe, and you think, I don't deserve this because my experience was different than most. And again, I'll take a second to tell people, go in for your annual exams, go in and get your tests done, because truly it could save your life as it did mine. So, yeah.
Right. This was picked up on an annual exam, on a regular exam. And as we all know that there are multiple stages of cancer, and this was one of the lower 1, 2, 3 stages and not the major stages. So, yeah. And just same thing kind of applies with diabetes. Like people will see my pump, my insulin pump, and they'll say, oh, you have that really bad diabetes. Like, oh my goodness. And then suddenly they start treating you with this deference that's maybe undeserved.
Right.
Because there are diabetics that have
brittle diabetes or have become unconscious and crashed their car, mm-hmm. who am I to complain? So mm-hmm. levels in all things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, for me, the one sort of takeaway from this experience was an innocence was lost, if you will, as far as how I perceive my body. You know, that's been interesting to me in part because I am a nurse now and, you know, I see people coming all the time to the hospital, but also because of my own journey where it's like, yeah, you know, you talk about brittle diabetes, this faith, if you will, that I had in my body that, you know, my job was to continue to do the best I could to eat. You know, I mean, I don't eat amazingly well. I don't exercise like at all.
I could co-sign that you do not eat amazingly well.
but still, for the most part, you know, I don't eat junk food 24/7. Right?
Well, we don't drink. We don't smoke. Mm-hmm. We don't eat, you know, junk. When you say innocence lost, you're really meaning that you're not invincible and you finally figured it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it manifests in very interesting ways. When I was going to nursing school, they required that we take these tests. And one of the tests, you know, I needed an x-ray for this and I needed blood work for that. And I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, you know, this reminded me so much of when I went in for my PAP. I was feeling just fine, had no symptoms at all, you know, and then when all was said and done, I was told, okay, you have cancer. So I was kind of, I had this anxiety of, okay, I'm going in for what's supposed to be a routine blood test for school. You know, who knows what else they're going to find. And as it turned out, you couldn't come with me. I think you had to drop the boys off at school or something when I got the results. And I remember sitting in the car holding this envelope and thinking, okay, here we go again. So yeah, that really, I'd never felt that before. Before I just took my body for granted. Of course I was fine. Of course I felt fine, you know, that kind of thing. So that's been an interesting thing, that I've sort of taken away from my experience.
Remember also one of the weird things about your cancer situation is that you learned you had cancer through a clerical mistake where they called you, the cancer doctor called for an appointment and said, hi, we're calling from the oncologist to make an appointment to deal with your cancer. And you were like, what? I have cancer? Because the doctor had been calling from a blocked number. So we don't pick up unknown numbers and we'd miss that out. So after a week of him calling after your PAP, he finally gave up and referred you to the cancer doctor. So unfortunately, we learned from the scheduler that you had cancer, which is not the way you want to learn these things.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't go down quite like that. I wasn't ignoring any calls because, you know, we listened to voicemails.
We weren't actively ignoring them. The point is, was we never heard the guy was calling. We didn't even know.
Yeah, no, he didn't call. He didn't call. He got a consult and the oncologist assumed that he was doing a handoff. So my OBGYN called the oncologist and said, I want a consult on such and such a patient. And the oncologist took that to mean I'm transferring her to your care. So the oncologist was very efficient and got his people working on it. So yeah, not quite as much back.
I thought we were missing his calls because I block unknown calls and they don't even ring.
Oh, no, no, it wasn't that. But anyway, he was going to call me when he got back from vacation. So the whole thing was quite.
But it's a comedy of errors is the point.
It was, yeah. But again, I mean, I think the truth of the matter is no matter how you learn of it, being told that you have cancer is never going to be a good day for anybody, right? I don't care if my OBGYN himself had called me, it still would not have been a good experience. But yes, definitely far better to hear it from him than to hear it from the secretary who then was doing her best. I mean, talk about somebody had a rough day at the office. I can imagine that she had a pretty bad day that day, you know. You could just hear in her voice. She was just felt so bad. I'm so sorry. And, you know, I'm trying to backpedal. How do you undo that? How do you say, oh, my bad? You know, wrong Mo. I mean, wrong Hanselman. What do you say? You know, but it is what it is. And we got through it. And, yeah.
So many years ago when we did the first podcast, you have an MBA. You were doing finance. You were working at a nonprofit. Fast forward now, you are a working nurse as a medical surgical nurse. Did you getting cancer cause you to go into nursing, or is that unrelated?
It was unrelated. I had already started the process of taking classes. I was doing anatomy and physiology at the time. So actually having the classes kind of helped me because they were a distraction, you know, so there wasn't a lot of downtime to sit there and sort of have a pity party. I mean, between, you know, you being on the road every so often and the kids and then me being in class, there just wasn't a lot of downtime for me to agonize and worry and be like, oh my gosh, you know. It was pretty much just go in and get the PAP, come back, get the results, go back again, you know, back and forth, do what we had to do, have the surgery. And I remember, like, a couple, I had my surgery on a Friday, and then on Tuesday, I had an anatomy and physiology exam, and it was just like, you gotta do it, or you gotta repeat the class, and no way, because I repeat, you know, I was gonna drop out of the class or anything like that. So it really helped me. I mean, of course, by far was the support that I got from you, right, and family and stuff like that, but having other things to distract me made the time pass by quicker. And I, in hindsight, I really appreciate that and thankful that I had that. So
it seems like you and I tend to do dumb stuff like that. I remember I had my appendix out on a Tuesday, and then that Wednesday or Thursday, I was on a plane to Sweden for a conference, and I remember being scolded for doing stuff immediately after surgery. So it seems to be a recurring theme of staying busy, but also perhaps making foolish decisions that we do.
Well, I mean, it was foolishness on your part because you had a choice, you know. For me, I was committed. It was a class, for God's sake, man. I had no choice. My hands were tied.
Why do we do stuff like that? Like, I just got back from South Africa, and then you were mad at me because I didn't take Monday off work. Are we both trying to tell each other to take a break, and we each refuse to do it?
No, you refuse to do it. I take a break all the time.
I'm trying to imply symmetry here in the relationship, and you are not taking, you're not going for it. Why? Why is that?
There is none. I'm the better person.
No, but seriously, we both do that. Neither one of us takes the other's advice for, like, chilling out. We're always telling each other, you should probably chill out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, most people, I think, are pretty bad at that. You know, we know what the right thing to do is. In some of these cases, we just don't do it. So, yeah, we both need to get better at that. And it's a responsible thing to do, really. You know you're going to be jet lagged. Take a day or two and just give yourself permission to recover. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So I went to South Africa, and I got to speak at a couple conferences, and I went to Kenya. And while I was in South Africa, I got to hang out with your family. Because you've got seven, well, you are four of seven, so there's six brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. Get to hang out with them. This is the second time we went, one of us went down there, but we didn't go together.
Right.
They came up here for our 15-year wedding vow renewal. Mm-hmm. But that was an interesting thing. Like 10 years ago, I don't think I would imagine, like, traveling alone, like, me going to see your family or you going to see your family alone, because when you're at that point in marriage where it's like, we have to do everything together, you know, we have to buy all produce together, we have to go to the shop, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But now we're like, yeah, I'm going to South Africa, I'll see your family while I'm there. You know what I'm saying? Is that like something that's only happens after 15, 17 years of marriage?
I don't know. I mean, I think as we mature, right, in the relationship, I mean, we get more comfortable with each other, and you probably have gotten more comfortable with my family, right? We are a bit of an obnoxious group, and it takes a while to really get us and what we're about. So by the time you reach, you know, once you pass the 10-year mark, I think you're in, you've made it, they've decided, okay, this guy's here to stay. So
yeah, I think it's 17 years this year, right? I keep saying 15, but you corrected me today. Mm-hmm. Publicly on Facebook. Thank you for that.
welcome.
That it's 17 years. They may be cool with me now.
Right.
Your family.
They're cool with you now. Yeah. You're in. Yeah,
I just feel like I've possibly reached that level.
Yes. You passed the test.
Yeah. Which is cool. Yeah. So yeah, it was good to see them. Of course, you made me take a lot of gifts. And when I always post little cute things like that on Facebook about how you always have me take gifts. Everyone who has family overseas apparently does this. I thought it was a, you know, South African thing or Zimbabwean thing. Apparently, it's universal. You have to take the maximum number of poundage, no matter what country you're going to like take jeans and shirts and candy and stuff like that. So I apologize for implying that maybe it was just your family that wanted the maximum kg of baggage taken.
That's right. That judgment that I heard before. I'm glad to see that you're eating humble pie. No, but it's funny. My sister and I were kind of kidding. When you came back, I asked you what your allowance was for the weight of the suitcase. And I think you said it was 22. I think you said
23 is the max.
You said 23 was the max. And then I asked you how much your bag weighed. And you said 22.5. And I said, oh, you lost half a kilo. Bummer. You know, yeah, it is sometimes been much. It's an expensive way to be, but really it's supposed to be expressing, you know, thoughtfulness and just you're happy to see people. And here it's a small thing to show that I thought of you. And so when it's done right, it's not supposed to be expensive. It's just thoughtful.
Yeah. Although, tragically, U.S. Customs took all the biltong, all of the beef jerky was taken.
Fie.
At the border, yes.
Fie, indeed.
Fie, indeed. And that sucked because that was like freaking 2 kg of meat.
Jeez, our loss.
Well, it turns out we were cheated because the biltong salespeople said, oh, yeah, just it's okay if you bring it when it's vacuum packed. That's a lie. It's never okay. They're trying to sneak it past the dogs or whatever. So I didn't mean to break international law. But fortunately, I declared everything. So tip to anyone who travels, declare stuff. Because if you don't, they'll just take the whole bag.
Yeah, or actually you could be arrested or something, you know? I mean, so bullet dodge there as well. But yeah, and I guess we should have known better. I mean, I think we kind of knew that meat isn't allowed to be brought in.
But isn't it? I wasn't trying to sneak meat in. I honestly thought that if it was vacuum packed, that somehow meant something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, it was I bought it at the store. I didn't go and like tromp around on a farm getting farm dirt on my feet.
Right, and then making your own biltong and bringing it over.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
I didn't salt the meat myself. I don't know. I was just kind of bummed. But there was another 2 kg lost that could have been spent on Nando's sauce.
Right. Yeah. Something. Well, every time one travels, I think you learn one new thing, right, at least. So it's always a good lesson. But I have a question for you. How was that experience? I mean, being there, not just with my family, of course, but just being in South Africa as a white male without your black wife. Did you feel different? Did you notice anything different?
That's an interesting question, because last time you and I were in Zimbabwe, we did like a little mini experiment where you and I were standing on the corner in downtown Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, and we were, I think it's fair to say, extremely conspicuous. Like,
right.
You know, I was the only white guy within several kilometers, let's say, if not dozens of kilometers, and everyone was looking at me. And then I just went into an alleyway, and then the whole, you know, after about 3 minutes, the entire street changed. Like, I was not visible. You became immediately invisible, and no one noticed that there was a visitor. In South Africa, I found the same thing. I was effectively invisible, depending on which spaces that I was in. So if we were at a predominantly white mall and I'm walking around, everyone just assumed I was a white South African until I opened my mouth. But, but of course I always open my mouth.
Of course you do. That's right. Yeah.
Thank you for your confidence. So like,
that's right.
Whenever I go to a country, that is not an English speaking country, I do my very best to at least get 10, 12, 20 phrases down. I think it's polite to try to order in the local language. Of course, every country is different. The French don't like you speaking bad French. Nothing's worse than ordering in the local language and having them switch to English with that quiet, implicit, oh, wow, you don't speak the language, so I'll switch to English.
No, but I mean, feel like that appreciate Chipotle. The effort, no matter where you are. The French, the, you know, South Africans, Zimbabweans, everybody appreciates the effort to say, wow, this guy is trying. So kudos to you.
Yeah. It was funny. I was ordering something at a restaurant and tried to basically the whole greeting. How are you doing? What am I going to order? What can I get? Try to do the whole thing in Zulu. And that immediately caused all of the ladies who were running the front desk to kind of run over. Where is your wife? Who is your wife? Who taught you this? Where is your wife right now?
This paragon of virtue.
I wouldn't say virtue. It became a little weird when they said, where is your wife currently? Because there was,
here's my number or what?
I don't mean to in any way imply that. I just thought it was interesting that your location currently became quite the point of interest.
Hmm.
It didn't quite devolve to the point where baby pictures came out, you know, of the boys. But it was interesting. And then someone said, wow, you got to be careful. You're going to give people a bad name because you're going to make everyone have to learn the local language.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I enjoy it. I enjoy trying to fit in anytime I travel. So it was weird though, because there's the travel ban that's going on made things awkward. It was always the number one point of conversation. But showing people that you're willing to try to speak the local language, or at least limp your way through the local language, inevitably made everyone smile. and actually got me through a number of weird things that happened at the airport. I think I told you that I didn't have a ticket when I got there because of some confusion.
Right.
And there was a missing seat and there were double bookings and, event. And I believe that through being pleasant, through being kind and through, you know, like I said, 20 odd words of Zulu, got me at least, I wouldn't say charmed my way through, but at least made them realize, oh, this person's kind and worth helping. And mm-hmm. they had a little more patience with me than maybe I think yeah. they would have.
Yeah, I mean, and that's true everywhere. You know, I many years ago, I worked as a waitress. And, you know, right now I work as a nurse, as I said, and you work with people. And I'm always surprised at how people forget that basic concept, that little pro tip that you're giving, that be pleasant, you know, for crying out loud. It helps make the conversation go better for you. The patient that says to me, hey, Mo, do you have time to bring me some ice water? Is more likely to get that ice water as soon as I can than the one that says, I demand my ice water now. You know, so
does that really happen?
All the time, because people think they're in a hospital and they take that to be a hotel. So it's like, chop, chop, get to it quickly. And sometimes it's like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. And now that you've talked to me that way, it's going to take even longer. It's being thoughtful, being respectful, being polite, being patient yourself is a good way to travel. It's a good way to visit another country. And it makes us look good to say, wow, he is a pleasant American, you know, coming to visit. And how nice is that? So good for you.
Yeah. Of course, when you do learn to speak a little bit of a language, and you speak it well, or at least it sounds like you're speaking it well. I did get myself into a number of situations where, I was asking for directions,
mm-hmm.
and they gave the directions entirely in the local language,
mm.
and I was only getting like every other word,
oh,
you know what I mean? Yeah. So like I was at a mall, and I went up to the information booth, and I was like, you know, unjani sisi yebu unjani asikwana yipila, and then it's like, and she's like, okay, and she's saying all this in Zulu, you know, okay, go down here, hang a left, nyapa,
yeah,
go ngapo, ngapa, and I'm like, in my mind, I'm going left, right, left, straight, right, and like, that's all I've got.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I mean? Yeah. So I'm pretty sure I know where I'm going, but I'm just nodding.
That's right.
You know, nyebo, yebo, nyako ngapo, okay, you know, nyapila, you know, nyabonga. And then I'm like, okay, and then I'm in my mind, I'm playing back the conversation, trying to remember which words will happen,
right,
because
right.
talking to you and practicing is one thing, but then being dropped into a country where they're busting it out at, you know, 100 words a minute.
Yeah, it's fast.
It's fast and the words squish together.
Yeah, yep.
So you, it turns out all these years you've been not squishing the words together. And then when you get down there, it's just like, oh, wow, they really talk fast here.
Yeah, it's no different with any language, you know. You listen to the TV and just like, whoa, holy cow, really?
Yeah, like trying to practice my Spanish while watching, you know, Spanish news.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's interesting. If someone would just closed caption them, then I'd be fine. You
right.
know what I mean? I need people closed captioning, and then it would be totally cool.
Yeah, it would be neat.
So your family misses you and wants you to come down there.
Nice.
So you should get down there right away.
Yeah,
it was a long flight.
It's long and it's expensive. I mean, because when we travel now as a family, you know, taking the four of us, man, it adds up.
Yeah, it's really challenging. And of course, trying to travel with two boys that are not teenagers, it was two 10-hour flights and a 7-hour flight plus 2.5 to 3-hour layovers. So I think, what was I, 33 or 34 hours door to door. And even now, I don't know where I am or what's going on, you know. I don't know what time it is.
No, I mean, jet lag is a real thing, you know, and it's tough for parents because, you know, I mean, we're reasonably good parents, you know. We don't want to fill our kids with, you know, nothing but TV for 34 hours or whatever, but man, it's tough. At some point you're like, there's nothing else but trapped in this tiny plane, you know. There's nowhere for you to kick a ball so you can work off that energy. And yeah,
there should be a ball kicking area.
That's right, in the plane.
Of the plane.
That's right.
But, you know, honestly, watching, like, I used to think, oh, I'll just watch every movie that I didn't see in the theaters. That almost makes it worse.
How so?
The headache you get, the I'm watching too many screens headache. So you have the I'm in an aluminum tin can in the sky headache. There's the I'm not drinking enough water, I'm eating crappy food because I'm on a plane. Combine all of those, are all distinct individual kinds of like feeling gross. You know what I mean? Like, I've been up too long, I feel gross. I'm eating crappy food. I feel gross. I'm not drinking enough water. I feel gross. And now I've been watching TV for the last 13 hours. I feel gross.
I feel gross.
You know?
Yeah.
There's just no solution. If there was just a track in the back that I could like run or a hamster wheel.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because what you want to do is like sprint. Mm-hmm. Just to get your legs stretched or a yoga class in the back. If they could cycle us through a yoga class, that'd be an amazing way to fly.
No, but you know, and the interesting thing is I always used to pride myself on being disciplined to be like, okay, well, I'm going to go to the bathroom because I can't stand, airplane toilets. I mean, so I'm like, okay, I'm going to go before I get on the plane. Then I'll drink as little as possible. Then I'll
you're going to hold it for 27 hours.
No, I mean, it's not a 27 hour flight, right? It's 10 hours and then you get a layover. So I'm like, I'll go before the 10 over flight, you know, hold it. Well, it's a good bladder, right? Back in the day when I had a good bladder anyway, you know? And of course, that's the worst thing you can possibly do.
It's so bad.
You've got to hydrate and then you've got to get up and move, you know? Otherwise, you're going to end up with these blood clots and what have you in your legs. So anyway, it's like, yeah.
It's disturbing all the stuff that you know now that you're a nurse of like,
all the
bad things that can happen.
I've been doing this wrong all my life. So yeah, it's important to get up, to drink your water, to hydrate, you know, to take a break.
I actually went and hid out in the handicapped bathroom for 5 minutes because it's like the biggest bathroom.
For shame.
Well, I mean, there were no people in line, to be clear. I'm just pointing out that, like, when you need a bright, small office where you can just kind of, like, in an airplane, where you can just kind of, like, rock back and forth and say, I have, you know, because
I'm okay. Well, I'll be fine.
10 hours and 54K, you know, kind of sucks. It was not the awesomest seat. So I just felt I needed a bright place to hide. So I went to the porta potty and just sat there and just said, oh, this sucks. You know what I mean? Can I just see the sun again?
That's right. Will this never end? Yeah.
It was so bad.
Anyway, yeah. No, yeah. It's always nice. And when you land on the other side, and then there's always just, for me anyway, this moment when you're just like, wow, this morning I was in Johannesburg and now I'm in Portland, Oregon. How amazing is that? Like, how great is technology, you know?
That is weird because there's no actual border between the days because you sleep, but it's never like epic 8 hour. I fell asleep and a day passed sleep. Mm-hmm. It's always like your body knows that it's fake, not really good sleep. Mm-hmm. So I get off the plane, you pick me up, and then we go and we get some food that like makes us happy, right? So I go to my bagel shop or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I'm there and the guy's like, how you doing? And I look at him and I go, I was in Johannesburg like an hour ago because that's what it feels like. You know what I mean? Because there was like, I got up this morning, I put my feet on the ground and I was on the African continent.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then some stuff happened.
Right.
For
yada,
like
yada.
30, yeah, yada, yada, yada. And now I'm in Portland getting a bagel. Mm. That part is weird.
Yeah.
So then you find yourself questioning, like, did it ever happen? Was I there for 2 weeks? What was going on? What was it happening when you were here?
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I realized that's changed since, because you and I have been going back and forth to the African continent for 17 years.
17 years, yeah.
Plus, the sense of isolation is less so. We never had WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. We never had Skype when we went originally. Mm-hmm. We had $3 a minute phone calls that were scratchy. Mm-hmm. What was different with me being gone over there, but being able to FaceTime you and the boys every day? Did that feel like I was closer?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely felt like you were close. I think there were only a couple of times where either we couldn't hear you clearly or something like that. But otherwise, man, when the connection was great, you were right here.
I mean, it could have been like I was in Wichita, right? I mean, it wasn't even, you said it was a weird connection sometimes, but that happens in New York.
Right, right. But I mean, it felt like we were right next door, like in your office and I was outside, you know, so that was again, technology is just amazing. And the idea that everybody's got cell phones, at least way more people there than did before. And, you know, the technology is amazing. Yeah, that's pretty, pretty interesting. I did have a question for you though. It's also as far as the weather. I mean, cause you know, it's winter over here, summer over there, and that juxtaposition and the aggressiveness of one moment you're in summer, the next you're in winter. How is that as a diabetic to deal with that, the back and forth?
Now I'm interested that you added as a diabetic. I don't know what does diabetes have to do with the weather for you?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, if you're sweatier, then it might change your insulin and how long it lasts, that kind of a thing.
Not really. I think it's more, I was born in Oregon, you know, I don't know what it is in Celsius, but room temperature for me is about 65. You know, I grew up sleeping with the windows open.
Mm-hmm.
because that's how you were meant to sleep.
Nonsense.
Right. Well, here we are, and you know, you're using the fireplace is on because, right. And you know, and you have a blanket that's an electric blanket. So you and I, you know, after all these years of marriage, I would say are 20 degrees off. What do you think? 15, 20 degrees?
Right, yeah, 20.
Let's just be real.
Yeah.
What's your preferred temperature in Fahrenheit?
Probably 90.
No, really. Come on. Don't be silly.
No, I'm telling you. When I feel like I don't need a sweater, I'm comfortable, you know, yeah, 85, 90.
Is it a wet 90 or a dry 90?
Oh, a dry 90.
Okay.
Humidity, please. No,
okay.
All
so
these
you don't
savages.
Like, okay. No. Well, so while I was there, it was 87, you know, to 90, but it was like 80 plus humid. It was just ridiculous. So yeah, it was like, get out of the shower, towel off, and then you're wet.
That's uncomfortable.
Yeah. That it's the humidity that bothers me the most. If it was a crisp, dry 90, I could handle that. But it was just I'm sweaty, my hair is sweaty, everything's sweaty that I don't like.
Right.
But you're right. Like I got back and it was 68, 65. And it was like, if like the world's air conditioning was on. And I was just like, ah, I found my set point.
That's right.
So yeah, I would definitely say that I don't think I would ever, if we lived there or moved there, it would be very challenging for me to get used to the heat.
Yeah.
Not to mention I got burned. I wasn't paying attention. Walking in the streets of Nairobi, you know, with all my buddies. Of course, I'm the one that gets burned. And it took 6 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, we walked to the Maasai market. We walked back. And they're like, you don't look so good, Scott. And you're like, oh, my God. I've been on the continent for 6 minutes, and I'm already...
You're teetering. You're red.
Yes, exactly. I'm a lobster.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's a challenge. But it is always a good experience to go over there. Met a lot of great friends. Got to hang out with your family, which is cool. And then we'll head back there next year, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Pretty excited about my brother getting married and my sister getting married. So that should be fun.
Cool. Well, that's our time. Thank you, Small Wife, for hanging out with me here on Hansel Minutes.
Well, I've got lots to say. We didn't talk about the working, both couples working, you know, both members of the team working, all that stuff. But we'll have to save that for next time, right?
Well, so last time we did this was 300 episodes ago. Do we wait 300 episodes? If you want to hear more from my wife on this podcast, let me know in the comments. And maybe she will come on, I don't know, a couple times a year if you're interested. And we could do one on working, working parents, working people in a relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always interested in hearing how other people do it because it can be hard, but yeah, sounds good.
Okay, cool. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.